again,
I don't need to rent tanks. That's a
question. Sometimes I think
I'm curious. What does it do for you?
It's a good story.
Now, let's resume learning. Okay, guys. We are tonight going to learn Malachim Bet, the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, Perek 17. Tonight, we will study the end of Malchus Yisrael. Right? Malchus Yisrael, the southern kingdom, will end in this chapter. The northern kingdom. I always get it wrong. The northern kingdom will end in this week.
Depends where you stand if you're up in Lebanon
or not. Whatever, I'm too confused. Okay. But Malchus Yisrael will end in this week's Perek. The last king of Malchus Yisrael is going to be a king called Hoshea ben Elah. He's the last king. And what we will see is, in some ways, Hoshea ben Elah is actually not a bad king. You would expect Malchus Yisrael to end like with the worst possible king, and that would be, right, now it's over. But yet, right, interestingly, here, let's read the Pesukim. Bishnah 12 la'achaz melech Yehuda malach Hoshea ben Elah b'shomron al Yisrael teisha shanim. Right, in year 12 of King Achaz of Yehuda, right, we studied about Achaz last week, not quite such a wonderful king. In year 12 of Achaz, Hoshea ben Elah is king. He is king for 9 years. There's a little bit of a dating issue over here, because there are other psukim that say that Hoshea ben Elah became king in year 20 of Yotam. Yotam was Achaz's father, rather than in year 12 of Achaz. There is a bit of a problem. The answer probably is as follows. Kings of Yisrael at this point are ruling because they overthrow their predecessor. So Hoshea ben Elah rules because he killed the previous king, Pekah ben Remaliah. Now in reality, forget about halacha for the time being, if you become king by killing the previous king, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're king right away. In order to, right, if I overthrow the previous king, I don't automatically step into the role of king, because sometimes it takes a while for the people to accept me. And sometimes the people might not accept me at all, no? Ein melech b'lo am. You can't be a king unless the people accept you. So, the answer to the contradiction about the dating of King Hoshea ben Elah is probably that at first he ruled just as a military commander who killed Pekah. Later on, he asserted himself and he actually became accepted as king. I don't think that's unreasonable. That's correct. Again, but as de jure as it could be in a relatively lawless society. Right? Now, there is just a halachic comment over here. The Yerushalmi in Horios discusses, you know, there are halachos of a king. And one halacha of a king is that an ordinary person, when he sins, or she sins, brings a karban chatos, called a kispa or se'ira, a female sheep or a female goat. But a king, when he sins, brings a sa'ir, brings just a male goat as a karban. The question is, who halakhically is a king to bring a sa'ir? No? There are different halakhos of kings. Oh. I could be a king insofar that if I disagree with the king, the king can kill me. That's called morid the malchus, no? I could be a king insofar as this karban. There are many different halachos potentially. There are halachos that Mishnayos and Sanhedrin speak about, melech lo me'id v'lo me'idin also, no? That a king doesn't testify in court. That was like the Lubavitchers at one point made a yontiv when the judge decided that the Rebbe didn't have to testify in a court case about the books. They said, oh, you see, the judge is paskening that the Rebbe has a din of a king, and You don't remember this?
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were... That's not why the court did it.
No, of course not.
Why did the court...
Because I think the court decided... The question was like the jurisdiction over the books, whether the books were owned by like the Lubavitch National Library, whether they're owned by the personal Schneerson family, or... And if it's owned by the Schneerson family, so there's this Barry Gorari, who still is like a physicist down in Pittsburgh, and he claimed to be the heir of the books. Whatever it was. I mean, it was an exciting thing, but the question is whether the Rebbe had to come and testify, and the court said that the Rebbe didn't testify, and say, oh, you see, the Rebbe is a king. There are halachos of kings, right? There's a halacha of a king, for example, that the king has to write a Sefer Torah, right? An extra Sefer, katavot mishnei ha-Torah hazot, an extra Sefer Torah. Now, for some halachos of kings, a king who rules without a Navi appointing the king does not have the halacha of a king. The Yerushalmi at the end of Harios writes that any king in Malchus Yisrael, which we now know as the Northern Kingdom, any king in Malchus Yisrael after Yehu ben Nimshi is not halachically a king. But that means that all of these kings are probably not kings. However, that might be a limited din for that one halach of the carbon, and maybe it doesn't apply for other halachos of being a king. Okay, whatever it is.
So what was Shaul's status if David was anointed?
So after David was anointed, Shaul still retained status of king, but David also had some sort of status as quasi-king. Right? These are like the halakha conundrums that we have to figure out. But basically, issue number one is Hoshea ben Elah becomes king at some point. This pasuk says in year 12 of King Ahaz. Hoshea ben Elah, is he good or bad? So the pasuk says, verse 2, Vaya'as hara be'inei Hashem, rak lo kimalchei Yisrael asher hayu lefanav. He's bad, but not as bad as his predecessors.
Standing by fame
forever. Right? Yeah, correct. But during the days of Hoshea ben Elah, that's when Malchus Yisrael ends. Pasuk Gimel, Alav Allah Shalman Eser Melech Ashur, and Hoshea becomes a servant, and Hoshea gives him gifts, etc. Now, let's just talk for a minute. Why, in which way was Hoshea ben Elah not as bad as the other kings? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells me that Hoshea ben Elah got rid of the guards that Yerovam, the first, put at the border between Yisrael and Yehuda. Remember, Yerovam the first established these agels, one in Be'er Sheva, one in Dan, right? And the people went, and they had their own festivals, and they went to be Ola Rego to these agalim that Yerovam established. Yerovam did not want the people to go be Ola Rego in Yerushalayim. By the way, you see that the religious divide is really critical, more than the political divide, no? We'll talk about that in a few minutes, what I mean in this sentence, but just... Like, inhale on that sentence, and then we'll discuss in a few minutes. But the reality is that Yerovam had these guards to not allow people from Yisrael to go and be Ola Rego. Well, what happens was, Hoshea ben Elah comes, and he's betailed the Pardesios. He got rid of the guards that Yerovam established. So that's why he's not so bad. But according to Chazal, inherent or latent in getting rid of the guards is the downfall. Because what really happened was he gets rid of the guards, so you would think the Jewish people should go and be Ola Rego, right? Because there's no longer guards. But did they go? No. They didn't go. So now, here's the problem. According to Chazal, this is the source of destruction. The destruction of Yisrael came because the people were not Ola Rego when they could have had an opportunity. Until now, the king was bad, and the assumption was the people was good. But now that the guards are gone, you see not only, you see now the guards are gone, the people are still not being Ola Rego, you see that the people are also bad, and that's why there's a Chorban. That's how the destruction came. Right? That's Chazal's understanding. The Gemara at the end of Tainus tells me that there was a yontif that was established the day that Hoshea ben Eli got rid of these guards. Ready? Sadie Hawkins Day. Also called Tu B'Av.
Yeah.
The 15th day of Av. It's not clear why the 15th day of Av is a yontif, or a quasi-yontif, or a pseudo-yontif, or a imitation yontif, or Sadie Hawkins Day. What happened the 15th day of Av? Unclear. Say Chazal, Tainus Daf Lamed Amud Beis, that what the this was the day Shebitei Hoshea ben Elah the Pardesios. This is the day that Hoshea ben Elah got rid of those guards, and that's why they made a yomtiv. Now, when you think about it, this ends up being a fascinating thing. There's a yomtiv that we still observe to this very day. Right, insofar as we don't say Tachanun. We have very low standards for what makes us happy. Skip Tachanun, woohoo! Right? We don't have such high standards. But
my in-laws got married on Tu B'Av.
Oh!
In about 1925.
Interesting. It's a good day to get married. Like Tisha B'Av is done, you're still in the summer. Great day to get married. But we don't know exactly what Tu B'Av is. The reason, one of the reasons Chazal said for Tu B'Av is this is the day Hoshea ben Eli got rid of these guards. Now, when you think about it, that means we are observing a yontiv on the day that began or that led to the ultimate destruction of Yisrael.
So how did it end up as Sadie Hawkins Day?
Did the young ladies go out?
This is the way. Again, Gemara tells me that Lohayu Yom Tov used to go out and they dance in the Kremlin. Why that happened? Unclear exactly what the connection is, but we know that's the official celebration of Tu B'Av. And one of the reasons in the Gemara is this. Now,
okay.
So there are two approaches, I think, that we can take. One approach is that you have to be happy even though there's something sad that accompanies the happiness. Let me give you an example. It says in Halacha, one of the most difficult Halachos, let's say a person, Rahman Litzvah, loses a parent and the person gets inheritance. So the Halacha is, you make two brachos. You make a baruch dayan ha'emes that you lost the parent, and you make a baruch a bracha of shehechi yanu or hatov ha'mitiv because you got inheritance. Now, what the heck is going on here? Right? How is there happiness? And right, it's a very strange halacha. Right? I think in some ways Chazal want us to be able to split and say, you know what? Sometimes something happens and that's a good thing. Even though it's in the context of something that's really bad, don't ignore these little good things.
Do you say those two brachot simultaneously or is there a time span?
You get an impression from the Gemara that you make it at the same time.
Wow.
The problem is, how am I allowed to make a bracha at that time if I'm an onin? So that's a detailed question. The brach dayan ha'emes we make as an onin, the assumption is that's the one exception. How do you make the shehechi yanu on the inheritance if you're an onin? That's a discussion that we talk about in halacha.
Probate takes a long time.
So you're not going to make the shehechi yanu. But that, you're thinking like a modern person, like in our world of probate. But again, at the time of the Gemara, it was.
But
right?
Wouldn't that be our advisor? I mean,
it is. No, but what Lottie is saying is correct.
Yeah.
Is that you're not going to make the shehechi yanu until you know you actually have something.
So that answers my question.
Right, correct. Okay. But I mean, but theoretically, I don't know what you would do
in terms of my question
about the owning.
Well,
yeah.
That's why they request that we make it Hatova HaMeitiv instead of shehechi yanu.
Well, it depends whether you have, if you're an individual who benefits from something, you make a shehechi yanu. If it is something that many people benefit from, you make that Tova HaMeitiv. No?
Like the one instance I've heard of is, let's say you make Kiddush on 1A,
Right, so there's another Hatovah Mitzvah if I get a second, if I bring a second wine out. That's a different type of Hatovah Mitzvah. But there's also a Hatovah Mitzvah. What?
I can't wait tonight.
But there's also a Hatovah Mitzvah when they have something that's good that benefits many people. Like when I buy a minivan for my family, so the bracha is not Shabbion, the bracha is Hatovah Mitzvah because the entire family benefits from it. If I buy a small little smart car, that might be, that would be kind of useless, but that would be a Shechiyana. Right? Okay, fine. So the fact...
Let's go slowly. Okay, let's go slowly.
If we have a Yontif called the 15th day of Av because Hoshea ben Elah got rid of these guards. Right? Even though this wasn't a bad thing, maybe we should be happy at the same time because of the benefit that came. Another approach. There are different types of people. You see, Hoshea ben Eli got rid of the guards. Some people actually listened and made Aliyah. Some people didn't. Few people, but some. The Yontif of Tu B'Av was established because now these people were able to get to the Beis HaMikdash, something they haven't done in hundreds of years since the days of Yerubim the First. And for them, there's a Yontif. And also, for the other people who didn't listen, that led to destruction. Now, how do I know some people made Aliyah? I know this because of Psukim and Tivrei HaYomim. I didn't print these out, but let me just... The king after King Achaz is King Chizkiyahu. The king of Yehuda is Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is an awesome king. And Chizkiyahu calls all of the Jews to make a Pesach. To offer Karban Pesach. Many people read these Pesukim Erev Pesach in the afternoon during the time that we would offer Karban Pesach. Many people read chapter 30 in Divrei Hayamim Bet. And the Pesach says that King Chizkiyahu called all of the Jews of Yisrael and Yehuda, and he tells them, come and make a Pesach. And you know what happened? The Jews came, and they made a Pesach. He said, in the letters, he says, don't be like your fathers who didn't make a Karban Pesach. Come, do it. And the Pesukim say that there was never a Pesach, right, like this Pesach since the days of Shlomo. Because in the days of Shlomo, the kingdom was united, and everyone came for Pesach. And since the days of Shlomo, there hasn't been an event until Chizkiyahu, because at this time, Marbit Ha'am, Rabat Me Ephraim Umnashe Yisachar Uzvulun, they came. Right? Meaning to say, what happened was, Chizkiyahu was able to bring people from Yisrael to bring a Pesach. That could only happen because Hoshea ben Elah got rid of these guards. Now again, if this is at the time of Chizkiyahu, we have to assume also that the timing, right, when he got rid of the guards was not right at the beginning of his kingdom, was later on. Because apparently right after that, the people go and they make this first Pesach that the Jewish people have had for so long, and maybe that's the Yontiv of Tu B'Av. Okay. Now, Pasuk Gimel says that Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur, comes to Yisrael, and Hoshea becomes a servant to him, and Hoshea gives him gifts. And then, Vayimtza Melech Pasuk Dalet, Vayimtza Melech Ashur b'Hoshea Kesher, Asher Shalach Malachim Oso Melech Mitzrayim, V'lo He'ela Mincha L'Melech Ashur, Kishana V'Shana, Vayatzeo Melech Ashur, Vayatzeo Beit Kele. Right, the Pasuk basically says that the king of Assyria found a conspiracy developing. He sees that Hoshea ben Elah has reached out to Sol, the king of Mitzrayim. Sol is not a normal name for kings of Mitzrayim, but here it's called Sol, Samach Vav Aleph, that's his name. And the king of Mitzrayim and the king of Yisrael are making a treaty, and the king of Ashur doesn't like that, so the king of Ashur goes and takes, right, he puts Hoshea in jail, etc. Right, that's what the Pasuk says. Now, it's hard to know exactly what happened over here, but in Alex Israel's essay on this topic, he puts it together as follows, and if I find the page, I'd be much happier. Here. Apparently what happens is as follows. Hoshea became king. He puts this together from Assyrian Chronicles and other books, which I'm trusting him. I don't know anything about this. But Hoshea had deposed Pekah. And then, after Hoshea deposes Pekah, the king of Assyria appoints Hoshea to be the king. Now, at this time, Hoshea, this is in the year 730 BCE, Hoshea is basically a vassal of the Assyrians. Shortly after, Tiglath-Pileser, who was the king of Ashur, of Assyria, dies, and Shalmaneser becomes the king. When Shalmaneser became the king, apparently Hoshea felt, you know what, this new king is not so strong, and I'm going to assert myself against Ashur. And he's looking for some help, so he reaches out to Egypt to overthrow Ashur. Well, this was a colossally bad move. Because what basically happens is that Shalmaneser says, who are you saying? Who you calling weak? Right? And Shalmaneser comes and takes King Hoshea, puts him in jail, Shomron is besieged, end of the story. So the error, again, and this comes just from putting stories together, right, in Assyrian Chronicles. We see over here the king is Shalmaneser, not Tiglath-Pileser. So it all seems to work out. That's the basic story. Now, the king of Ashur goes, he camps against Shomron, he besieges the city for 3 years. In year 9, the king captures Shomron, he exiles Yisrael, Vayashev otam bachlach uvchavur nahar gozan va'arei madai. He puts them in an area by the river of Gozan, the cities of Medes. Now, this is an interesting thing. The Golos of Yisrael happens now, and according to the standard approach in Chazal, they never come back. They have not returned since right here.
Oh, they never returned.
Yeah.
They could be all over.
Can they be all over? I don't know. Chazal say, the Pasuk says that they go to this one area. If anything, you get the impression that they went to one place. Now, obviously, over time they moved, but the Golos is to one place. The Golos of Yehuda ended up going to the entire world, eventually. I don't know where the Golos... We have all these stories about the Sambati on the river,
yeah,
and that maybe these 10 tribes, that's where they are. The tradition is that the 10 tribes are in one area. Unlike the Golos of Yehuda that ended up going to the entire world, the Golos of Yisrael ends up being localized. Now, the Kabbalah Svarim say the following idea. One of the ideas of Golos, and this is something that Rabbeinu Hirsch actually focused on, one of the ideas of Golos is that the Jewish people are supposed to go and influence the entire world. Right? Rabbeinu Hirsch was a very big fan of Golos, because he felt that Golos gives us an opportunity to spread Jewish values, and how much of Western civilization has been influenced by these Jewish values, etc. Correct? There's something to it. But in order to have that, it has to be that you as a people adhere to the Jewish values. Say the Kabbalah Sfarim, says the Rambam Panu in the Asara Ma'amaros, he points out that, you know what happened? Because the people of Israel were not as religious, were not as committed to Hashem, so therefore there's no need for the Golos to be spread as wide. The people of Yehuda who were more committed had Golos that spread to further places in order to influence everybody. It sounds like a backwards type of svara, almost.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Right? But the people of Yisrael had Golos in only one area. And again, and according to the standard approach, there's a Tosis in Erchin that says that the people of Israel came back, and by Yesheni, a representative group from each of the 10 Shvatim came back, but the standard approach is that they did not come back.
So does that
Didn't you ever invite people to come back to Yehuda?
I think he invited them, but they didn't come. Right? The reality is that the people of Israel have not returned. Again, certainly Amos, they have not returned. I think that's the reality. Now,
Does the staying in one place give any credence to present day? Let's say with the Ethiopian.
Yeah, so we have the Ethiopian people have a tradition that they come from Shevet Dan. And there's a group of B'nai Israel in India who have a tradition they come from Shevet Gad. It's entirely possible, although we have no real evidence. Karen Bacon, actually, years ago in the first Torah Mada journal, wrote a nice article on DNA evidence with the Ethiopian Jews to compare them to other Jews and to see is there a genetic link. That was that was an interesting point. You know, it's hard to know. They certainly have a tradition, and again, obviously, as we're getting closer to Mashiach time, it makes more sense that these lost tribes will return in a certain way. It makes sense, but we just don't know. Now, one other thing about Ashur. Ashur exiles the people. That is a slightly unusual thing, although not unheard of. You conquer a people, you kick them out. But then what Ashur did, and we'll read about this next week, is Ashur took other people and brought them into Israel. Those are the people called the Shomronim, effectively. What? The bad Samaritans. Right? Now, what that means is that Ashur had an approach to the world which is you conquer a country, move people from A to B, B to A, move everyone around. Chazal, the Romans did some of it also, correct. But Chazal have a halakhic statement based on this called Basancherev uBilbelas Kol HaUmos. Sancherev messed up all the countries. There are halakhos that I'm not allowed to marry a Mitzri. Right? I'm not allowed to marry, pick a nation. Edom, Mitzrayim. There's certain nations, what? Moab and Edom and Mitzrayim. Right? We're not allowed to marry people from certain nations. So, how do you, maybe the girl that you're marrying who's a convert, maybe she's a convert from Mitzrayim, how are you allowed to marry her? The answer is, right? And let's say someone from Egypt comes and they want to convert. It could be a Shiloh and the regular Beis Din. Are you allowed to convert somebody? The answer is yes. Why? Because they're not Egyptians anymore. And that's what's going on over here. When he moves the people out of Israel, what he's really doing is he is, right, this is part of a relocation plan, etc., which is tremendously disorienting. Right? Not tremendously disorienting that there are other people living in your country. Okay, we have to move a little bit quicker. So, the people are exiled. Then the Pasuk basically gives us religious reasons for the exile. Right? Pasuk Zion through Yud Beis tells us that the Jewish people sinned to God and they served other gods. They vayelchu b'chukot hagoyim. By the way, Chukos HaGoyim is a technical halachic prohibition that we are not supposed to imitate the non-Jews. Right? So, stage one is this, is that they go to Chukos HaGoyim, and then, Vayichab'u b'nei Yisrael dvarim asher lo keino Hashem lo kehem. Basically, they did improper things. They made up things about God. They built bamos from in all these areas. Bamos are altars. They're really serving Hashem at this point, but they're doing it improperly. They build matzevos. A matzeva is a stone, a single stone. They build asherim. And asherah is a tree, not necessarily a tree that was worshipped as Avodah Zarah, but a tree that was part of the Avodah Zarah process, and they sacrifice there, and they do bad things to anger God.
And then they serve idols. Now, if you read these psukim, what we really have is an increase in what they're doing wrong.
Zion 3 Yud Bey says, first they imitate the Goyim, then they have Bamos, Asheros, then finally they have Gilulim.
Then Pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Daled is a warning to the Jews. Right? A Navi comes.
Vayaad Hashem b'Yisrael b'Yehuda b'yad Nivi'e Kocho Zalemar.
Right? God sends warnings through Nevi'im and Chose.
A Navi is probably a higher level prophet than the Chose.
Right? Some statements in Chazal say something, or in Mishonim, I'm saying Chazal, is that a Navi sees during the day, a Chose only sees at night. Others say that Navi has a clearer vision than the Chose, whatever it is. But God sends these Nevi'im to warn them.
Keep the mitzvos. Right? Keep the mitzvos. But, v'lo shameu, pasuk yadalet, v'yakshu et arpam. By the way, the language over here is just language straight from the Bible. We don't listen to God. We are stubborn people. Right? It's like the back of the necks of their parents. They didn't trust God. Then, tesvav through yudches, they rejected the mitzvos. They rejected the treaty, the covenant that God made. Right? They follow nothingness. They give up on all the mitzvos of Hashem. They make masecha, molten images. They make agalim. They make asherah. They bow down to the tziva hashamayim. They bow down to the celestial beings. They serve Baal. They bring their children, right, Ba'esh. That's called the worship of Molech. They do divination. They are getting God very angry. They're provoking God. So God gets very angry, and only Shevet Yehuda remains.
What emerges over here is as follows. There is a progression, or a regression. First, they imitate Goyim. Then they serve Avodah Zarah. Right? That's stage one. The Navi comes, warns them. They don't listen to the Navi, and they give up on doing the mitzvos. Apparently in stage one, they might be worshipping Avodah Zarah, but they're still doing mitzvos of Hashem. No? But then they give up on the mitzvos. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And then they go into more evil, more pernicious types of Avodah Zarah, like Molech. Right? It gets worse and worse. But, Pasuk Yutes and Chaf. Yutes and Chaf is a comparison between Yehuda and Yisrael. In Yehuda, they're also not keeping the mitzvos. Right? So God is rejecting all of Yisrael, and he gives them to Shosim, etc., and he throws them away. Ada shehishlicham mipanav. Because Yisrael ripped off of Beis David, and they appointed Yeravam ben Nevat, and Yeravam pushed them away from God, and he made them sin terribly. Effectively, so long as there was a connection to the tradition of Malchus Beis David, as bad as people are, God does not completely disgust in them. The Jews of Yehuda are no great sheikhs either. But God doesn't disgust in them because they have this tradition from Malchus Beis David. And that keeps God from rejecting them completely. Now the language, by the way, in Pasuk Chav, that God throws them away mipanav, God throws them away from his face, that language is actually very interesting. The Ramban comments that Eretz Yisrael is the land, again, it's considered like right in front of Hashem. Every other country in the world, right, obviously Hashem takes care of it. Hashem has ministers, angels, who take care of countries for Hashem. Eretz Yisrael is the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself looks after. Hashem threw us out of Eretz Yisrael, through the people of the kingdom of Yisrael, which we now know as the northern kingdom. He threw them out of Yisrael because of this regression, because they did so many sins. They continued doing the sins of Yeravam ben Nevat,
So God says, you know what? I have to exile you to Ashur, where they are Ad Hayom Hazeh. Whatever Ad Hayom Hazeh means in Navi, that's what it is here. Also, again, so this is the end. It's a very sad ending. The end basically comes in a paradoxical sort of way at the time when the king is better than other kings. And maybe the concluding part of this perek is to show us that, you know what? The reason for the exile is that this is the culmination of so many years of Averos. So, the best way to show this is the culmination, this is the straw that broke the camel's back, is by saying, oh, you have a good king, but still, because it all built up so high, eventually the exile came in. Okay, these are the points I wanted to make. Thank you for listening, guys. Have a good night.